The Forward Thinker Show is available wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, it's Coral, and welcome to The Forward Thinker Show, the podcast where we share the stories and expertise of global leaders in business and technology. Today, we're joined by Roberto Martinez, a current computer science student, former intern at Meta, and now the founder of GammaSwap. Hello, Roberto.
To be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thank you for coming.
Yeah, how's it going?
It's going good. Well, Roberto, one of the reasons why I invited you is because I'm pretty biased, because you're from. We gotta tell the people where you're from.
Oh yeah, so I'm from the small island of Dominican Republic. Yeah,
we love it, Dominicano, ya tú
sabes.
Bueno, Roberto, let's get into why we're here. So, you're a founder of a business, and that has like of a software business, but like I wanna know like from like just like computer nerd to like mm-hmm. building a software business. I wanna start at the beginning. Like, how did you get into the world of tech?
So I guess I'll start. From the bare bones beginning, so I was born in Dominican Republic in the capital, lived there for 6 years, mm-hmm. so very young. Then my family decided to, you know, pack up their bags and move mm-hmm. to the United States, you know, big risk. I really appreciate them for that. Mm-hmm. So shout out to my parents, mm-hmm. you know, for that risk. Mm-hmm. But yeah, my family was mostly like a business-oriented family. My dad owns a business, and my mom works for a newspaper company mm-hmm. here in Miami. I mostly grew up with technology, so I was kind of like on YouTube, mm-hmm. you know, just watching a lot of Minecraft videos or anything that sounded interesting. Like, there was a video that I watched, mm-hmm. someone recreating a computer in uh-huh. Minecraft. So it was like a 2-hour video, and you could see like quite literally all of the components of a computer mm-hmm. With redstone. Mm-hmm. So it allows you to kind of just kind of turn things on, turn things off. And it amazed me. I was like, oh my God. So like, what can you do with this stuff, you know, in real life? Mm-hmm. So it was really slow, but it was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then I guess like over time, as I got older, I was very interested in sports, mm-hmm. so I did a lot of sports in the beginning, and I started my own like sports graphics,
really?
Like Instagram profile. So I started with technology pretty early, you know, with Photoshop mm-hmm. and, you know, Lightroom and all these other like software suites, mm-hmm. just kind of designing sports graphics, just watching on YouTube, like how to swap a jersey.
Yeah.
So I got really into like that type of stuff, you know, very early, entrepreneurial like, and you know, I made a couple bucks. I mean, it was pretty cool. Like, I just created nothing to something, and then you know, a lot of people liked it. We had like 2,000 followers, which back then,
yeah,
you know, Instagram didn't have stories, mm-hmm. so or any kind of like ad platform like mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. So that was a pretty good time, and mm-hmm. then you know, let's fast forward more to high school. Mm-hmm. So high school, I went to kind of a more STEM focused school. Mm-hmm. So studied engineering, like actual engineering.
Wow.
You know, worked on like a lot of more physical projects, like, you know, paper planes, mm-hmm. You know, more things like hardware and stuff like that. But I found it not very interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't really see myself building things like that. I was tinkering with like more mm-hmm. AutoCAD. I don't mm-hmm. know if you've ever heard of AutoCAD.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
So it's like a software where you can like model mm-hmm. like pretty much anything. You can model this microphone mm-hmm. or a phone.
Yeah.
And I found myself more on that than like where my other classmates would be, which would actually be like creating like the piece.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wait, maybe I might like this thing.
Yeah.
I mean, originally, also, I was very interested in medicine and stuff like that. But then, you know, fast forward to COVID. It was March 2020.
Mm-hmm.
You know, schools ended. Not ended, but we kind of were at home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I kind of fell into this Python course. Mm-hmm. It was just random. It was a really, really cool Python course. So I got so, you know, involved with that, that I didn't, you know, when it would come, you know, time for school, I would just have, you know, I'm sorry if any of my high school teachers are watching, but yeah, so basically I had the class video or whatever, and then I would be kind of like in my Python course. Just like learning and building projects.
So you weren't paying attention.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention. I was one of those kids that if I would get bored into something, you know, I needed to find something to do. So that took up a lot of my time.
Yeah.
You know, in the course of March all the way to like June. I even started like doing like a CS50.
Oh yeah.
The Harvard course.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically that was, it's basically a course offered by Harvard. It's free, and it teaches you the introduction of computer science. So I learned a lot. It was pretty low level, like bare bones.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, okay, let me try this out. And it was in C++, you know. I'm just kind of like throwing myself out there, absorbing. And I didn't even know what to take of it. So, you know, I'm kind of doing all these things. And then something really interested me when I got into Robinhood. So the app Robinhood is basically like a stock market app where you get to buy and sell, you know, stocks. And I wondered, like, how are these numbers, like, changing all the time? Like, I was very curious as a kid. I'm still curious now and will forever be curious. But, yeah, I was wondering, like, why, like, how are these numbers changing all the time? What is happening behind this? So I was like, you know what? You know, me studying Python, going to these courses, like, it's kind of like meshing into a pattern here.
Now everything's coming together.
Right. Now everything's coming together. And, you know, I was always like a math brain as well. I'm really bad at, like, English was my second language. So, you know, I always went into the more logical side. So, yeah, that's kind of like how I wanted to get into computer science. And then, you know, fast forward, I got an internship my first year at this company called Liberty Mutual. And then from there, I think that solidified my interest.
Your love.
Yeah, my love for computer science.
And for technology.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you already explained, like, the influences you had growing up in DR. I want to know, so you were just interning at, like, building software for other companies. How did you have your company? How did you start GammaSwap? Let's talk about that. Oh. This is the meat of the episode, because building a software company, it's people think that, you know, you do hackathons and you're like, maybe this is a good idea. But now you've actually tried to do an actual company with that. Yeah. So how did you build GammaSwap?
Actually, it started as a hackathon project.
Oh, it did?
So, you know, I remember the last time we met was
at ShellHacks.
ShellHacks, right? Yeah. So this hackathon was it was a Miami hackathon. It was more crypto focused. So it was the Activate X wormhole. So basically, there were, you know, you got to build your own crypto project in the spaces of, like, sustainability, decentralized finance, you name it. So I just went in, and it was in Miami-Dade, the one in downtown. So I just go inside and not expecting anything. I'm just saying, you know, maybe I just want to enter a project. I just want to see what's going on. So I meet my friend, Jeffrey. Shout out to Jeffrey. You know, guy ex-Citadel. So he was, now he works at Rippling. And, you know, me and him were trying to find projects. So this hackathon was kind of a whole week. So we were already on the first and second day when we met. And so we're like, okay, we have to find a project.
Yeah.
We have to find something. Because if not, you know. So we go around the entire campus, and most people are telling us, hey, we already, you know, have enough people.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have an idea. You know, we probably don't want to add more people because it gets too hectic. I understand. And kind of like the light was kind of turning off on us. Over time, we were like, oh, man. Are we gonna find are we gonna find a project?
Yeah.
And we still tried. So We still kept going until the fourth day. Mm-hmm. I said there was kind of this room where there was a bunch of hackathon projects together. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, let's go in there and let's ask these people, like, you know, maybe if they would have, you know, any space for us. Mm-hmm. So we go in, and now, who is my co-founder, his name's Daniel, was working on a project. Basically, this very bare bones. He's been working on it for, like, about a year or so, and he's telling me about the project,
yeah,
of like how you know, I'll go into the story of like what is GammaSwap, mm-hmm, later, but he was explaining to me the project,
mm-hmm,
and I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like, you don't have a front end for this stuff. You mind if I just build it out for you? And he, mm-hmm, says, you know, he didn't even know he needed that.
Wow.
He thought he just needed the algorithm. And I was like, I think you need to build a product. Yeah. I think you need some sort of front end. It was really bare bones. So,
yeah,
he was like, you know what? Okay. And I think that was like pivotal moment there. You know, that's where things like just changed. Because, you know, the next 3 days,
mm-hmm,
you know how hackathons are, where you, yeah, don't sleep.
No,
you're eating nothing. You're eating chips or Coke, and yeah, your brain is kind of on fire,
yeah,
for 3 days. So that's kind of how it was.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even go back home. I just stayed there for like a day or two, and then I went back.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back for the last day.
Mm-hmm.
So we were just hacking, and I'm still not understanding of the product like fully,
mm-hmm,
but I'm able to build a front end for this stuff because that was my specialty, what I got into. And at the end, we just, you know, we hacked it out. And luckily, you know, long story short, we actually won like 12 grand for,
wow,
the project. Yeah. So the funny thing is that after,
mm-hmm,
a lot of people were interested in the project, like, hey, you know, I want to talk more about this. And again, I'll go explain what it is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a month later, this was actually the month that I was going into my Facebook internship.
Oh.
So I'm here, like, conflicted. Like, what am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Is this thing could possibly take off?
Mm-hmm.
It could possibly something real?
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have Facebook, which is probably, you know, solidified as a,
mm-hmm,
really good experience,
mm-hmm,
internship. So,
mm-hmm,
basically what I did there, I took the internship,
mm-hmm,
and I kind of referred. I still was with the team.
Mm-hmm.
I just was kind of away for some time,
mm-hmm,
but I wanted to go back.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I really, really, this is my chance now that I'm young, that,
mm-hmm,
I should take full risk. It should be risk on right,
wow,
now, 100%.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I did the Facebook internship. I learned a lot about Facebook, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what, when I entered Facebook, I thought it was just going to be like a big tech bureaucratic company,
mm-hmm,
which to some, you know, some perspective it is,
mm-hmm,
but Meta, or at least the vision that Mark Zuckerberg has given it, has been to break things fast,
mm-hmm,
and reiterate.
Mm-hmm.
So I always forget what the quote is, but it's break fast.
Fail fast?
No, it's something, mm-hmm, like build fast, break, fail fast, or,
mm-hmm,
break things,
mm-hmm,
or build quickly. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the whole entire premise is don't worry about,
mm-hmm,
you know, getting it perfect. Build it quickly, break it quickly, and keep iterating until it's perfect, or until,
mm-hmm,
it's something that works.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at Facebook, I'm not sure how much I can say it. I'm not going to say too much because I'm probably not able to. But at Facebook, each team is treated like a startup.
Wow.
So each team is kind of like independent. They have their own goals.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own budget.
Wow.
That Facebook gives them, and they kind of negotiate that budget. And then they also have, you know, kind of steps,
mm-hmm,
like a whole roadmap for this stuff. And,
wow,
you know, there's 100 teams, probably,
mm-hmm,
50 to 100 teams around Facebook globally.
Mm-hmm.
And I really saw how, like, when me and my manager were working together,
mm-hmm,
like, it was a very open thing. Like, she introduced me to what she was doing in her job, and she allowed me to you know, bring in some mm-hmm. advice or maybe suggest things
yeah.
that they should do
mm-hmm.
while they were, you know, in whatever they were working on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, it's kind of very similar to what startups do. They're kind of like scrappy.
Yeah.
They kind of like, you know,
very fast.
Very fast. Yeah. Obviously with a North Star.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have to have your main
like direction.
Vision, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I think this is really cool. And also Facebook is or Meta mm-hmm. rather is known for being for building out one of the most biggest open source projects.
Yeah.
Like React. Mm-hmm. Like Llama, yeah. which is the open, it's the basically the large language model
mm-hmm.
that they have. So it's, you know, they've done a lot of innovation in the open source space. And a lot of in the startup world, like there's a thing with mm-hmm. Meta employees that after some time mm-hmm. they get tired and they go ahead and start their own thing. Yeah.
So, Roberto, it sounds like even though you were conflicted at the beginning, the experience you had at Meta actually helped you
exactly.
become a better founder
exactly.
because of the company culture they had there.
Right.
So how was it building GammaSwap? What is GammaSwap?
Okay, so GammaSwap is a very interesting project.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in the crypto space, in the mm-hmm. decentralized finance space. So mm-hmm. I think it makes sense for me to kind of like go back and explain what is crypto,
mm-hmm.
what is cryptocurrency. So basically crypto is the root word for cryptography.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it's to ensure that there's not a middleman relaying mm-hmm. between a message between two parties, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to have interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure, like for example, WhatsApp, mm-hmm. it's end-to-end encryption. So if I were to send you a message on WhatsApp,
mm-hmm.
you are the only person that is receiving that message. Or it should be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, no, it is. So basically,
yeah.
how it works is it's a very clever set of algebraic functions that mm-hmm. allow you to do this. And then we get with the idea of Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if you've bought Bitcoin before.
I've heard of Bitcoin.
Or dealt with it before. Yeah. You know, it was basically a white paper released by Satoshi Nakamoto.
Mm-hmm.
No one knows who he is. He released it in October 2008. And basically stating that, hey, we have this project, right, that allows you to transact mm-hmm. value through a settlement layer that's very trusted.
Mm-hmm.
So basically it's like blockchain. It's backed by cryptography. So basically these hash functions is what backs each block together.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically, to be able to reproduce those hashes, they are so unique that by the time you actually reproduce this, we'll probably be at the stage 5 of civilization. We'll probably be going into multiverses. I don't know if you watch Marvel.
Oh, no.
Go into that. And then GammaSwap is not built on Bitcoin.
Okay.
So Bitcoin was the beginning of mm-hmm. Of cryptography, cryptocurrency. Not beginning of cryptography, mm-hmm. but cryptocurrencies and stuff like that. So after came Ethereum,
mm-hmm.
which is what GammaSwap is built on. So
Vitalik
Buterin, mm-hmm. the co-founder of Ethereum, he basically proposed this model for prediction markets.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, betting markets, they have odds
mm-hmm.
that are built by algorithms. And he proposed, hey, can we kind of do this kind of decentralized exchange you know, on chain? Can we build these type of prediction markets on
mm-hmm.
blockchains? And a lot of people were very interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
It took over the world by a storm. So then comes in automated market makers.
Mm-hmm.
So automated market makers, if you don't know what market making is,
mm-hmm.
It's a strategy in the finance markets that allows like proprietary firms, it's practiced by proprietary firms like Citadel,
mm-hmm.
like Optiver. And what they do is that they give liquidity to
mm-hmm.
a market. So
mm-hmm.
a market is just you and me. Let's say you mm-hmm. want to sell me this microphone.
Yeah.
And I want to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we negotiate on a price.
Mm-hmm.
So that negotiation is what creates that market. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes the buyer and the seller don't agree at that exact price, right? Mm-hmm. There's going to be a difference, a spread. Mm-hmm. So then come these market makers that give liquidity and say, hey, I will buy to you mm-hmm. at any price, at this mm-hmm. bid price. And then I will also sell this to you at any ask price. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the technological term. And basically, that allows people to, that provides the liquidity that mm-hmm. like enhances the trading in the market, mm-hmm. right? So long story short, this market making technique it could be seen as toxic. Because when these big companies come in with a lot of money, mm-hmm. they can destroy the price of mm-hmm. a stock. And so you or me, someone who's not, doesn't have, you know, millions and billions of dollars, mm-hmm. we get destroyed because we buy a stock mm-hmm. and then the price drops to pretty much negligent amount.
Yeah.
And you ask, what happened? This company makes sense. And that happens with manipulation of these companies. Mm-hmm. So the cool thing is that's what Vitalik wanted to do. He wanted to say, hey, let's take out these bad actors mm-hmm. and let's just do this with math and smart contracts. Mm-hmm. So then comes Uniswap. Mm-hmm. And Uniswap is one of the biggest protocols now who have design this automated market maker, right? Mm-hmm. So now you don't have an actual market maker. You have an automated one. Mm-hmm. And this is backed by math. Mm-hmm. It's backed by quite literally an algebra equation that we can do on our own.
Yeah. Not like by manipulation.
Exactly, yeah. Right. So yeah, it's basically a smart contract that creates a price and gives you an order at any price point across the curve. It's getting very deep, mm-hmm. but it allows you to essentially trade without having a nefarious partner mm-hmm. to execute the trade for you. Mm-hmm. So then what GammaSwap came in, enter GammaSwap now. Mm-hmm. So we've all been waiting for.
Yeah.
So enter GammaSwap now, and we say, hey, when we provide liquidity, mm-hmm. You're essentially expecting that the price stays the same. It's like if I put in my money in a bank account, mm-hmm. I want it when I get it back, mm-hmm. I want it the same, right? Mm-hmm. I don't want it to be $0 when I take it out, right?
Yeah.
I want my money there with my interest.
Yeah.
However, with the advent of blockchains and smart contracts, there's a lot of constraints. There's a lot of technical constraints with blockchains. That's mm-hmm. the downsides of mm-hmm. being decentralized. Mm-hmm. You know, things cost money. Mm-hmm. There's gas costs with these Ethereum smart contracts. And essentially, you know, we weren't, you know, the people providing liquidity in Uniswap, which is the biggest platform right now for automated market makers, mm-hmm. they were taking out their money and they were noticing that it was worthless. Really? And they asked themselves, why does this happen? Like, why am I should be retrieving a fee. Mm-hmm. So basically these exchanges, when you put in your money, you put in liquidity mm-hmm. in exchange for a fee. And that fee is given to you by traders mm-hmm. trading. They're trading, they're paying a fee, and that fee is given to the liquidity providers because they're essentially taking that risk. Mm-hmm. So GammaSwap comes in and say, hey, you know, we need to create a marketplace. We need to create a market for this mm-hmm. because, you know, users that are providing liquidity, mm-hmm. they are not able to protect themselves against this stuff.
So the problem you were trying to solve is that the users couldn't protect themselves from
this impermanent loss. Mm-hmm. That's the term. Mm-hmm. And also automated market makers have something called slippage, mm-hmm. which means that when traders are making a trade, mm-hmm. they sometimes don't get it at the price they want. Mm-hmm. So it's like if I want to buy Meta stock mm-hmm. for $400 and I end up getting it at $300. Mm. Obviously, that's not a real thing. But if it is, then we have a problem.
Yeah,
and that is a problem with the automated market makers. Those are the downsides to it. So. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure that as GammaSwap, we're building a volatility product. So mm-hmm. with this volatility product, it allows you mm-hmm. to borrow mm-hmm. from that market. Mm-hmm. So by borrowing, that allows us to do some, you know, fancy financial engineering mm-hmm. for you to profit if there is volatility in that pool, mm-hmm. right? So the reason why people are losing money is because as the price changes a lot, mm-hmm. your value of your tokens goes mm-hmm. down, mm-hmm. right? Because people are trading the more valuable currency. They want it in their pocket.
Yeah.
And they're keeping all the less valuable currencies in the pool. Oh. So the people with the liquidity, you know, they're kind of like, hey, I have all this low value token and all of the actual high value token mm-hmm. was drained.
Oh, wow.
So then GammaSwap allows you to borrow from this mm-hmm. and protect yourself from this. It's a one-to-one trade mm-hmm. Opposite to what a liquidity provider does. Mm-hmm. So let's say if the price of a liquidity pool moves a lot, mm-hmm. I would take a straddle position in GammaSwap mm-hmm. and essentially I would be profiting mm-hmm. Such that, you know, if a price moves, mm-hmm. on a bound, that's enough. Mm-hmm. So this was actually very interesting mm-hmm. To a lot of investors, very interesting to a lot of people mm-hmm. because, you know, now with the advent of digital money,
yeah.
a lot of people are moving their net worths mm-hmm. away from the dollar. You know, yeah. a lot of people are moving their money away from banks and they want to protect themselves. They want to do things more in the ether, in the mm-hmm. abyss, which mm-hmm. is what we call Ethereum.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of like where the future is going, is people are going to start owning more of mm-hmm. their of their money, of their own, data.
Of their own digital currency.
Of their own digital identity.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the basic premise of GammaSwap. Yeah. You know, I've worked on it for a year and a half now.
Wow.
So it's been since May of 2022. Yeah. We have never looked back. Mm-hmm. We raise a good amount of money.
Yeah.
To be able to hire employees mm-hmm. and, just kind of like build the product out mm-hmm. and then build the next versions further. So, mm-hmm. you know, now we're launched, so you can go mm-hmm. on GammaSwap.com mm-hmm. and, start trading. You just need a wallet. You just need a wallet mm-hmm. and an address. Mm-hmm. And that's it. You know, you can just start trading. You need to just deposit some Ethereum or some mm-hmm. USDC, depending on what pool you want to trade on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you can go ahead and do that. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. That's the cool thing about crypto or yeah. blockchain, is that all you need is an address and a private key. And I can go on any crypto application. You know, one day I can go on a decentralized social media app. Mm-hmm. And then the other day I can just start trading with the same thing. Pretty cool.
Yeah. And so it sounds like this idea was like very interesting mm-hmm. to a lot of investors. How did you like after the hackathon, right? You got your first like round of investment. Could you explain how you got the money for GammaSwap in like different stages? Because I think there's like a term for this.
Mm-hmm. You're like raising capital. Mm-hmm. One thing I didn't mention was mm-hmm. that my other co-founder was the judge. My other co-founder was the... So, I mean, I don't think it was rigged, because he didn't know. He just really liked the idea, and he said, hey, maybe can I join you guys?
Yeah.
And I was like, and we were like, yeah, I mean, this is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, preface on that. So the cool thing about venture capital, mm-hmm. and I will say...
What is venture capital?
So venture capital is basically a market. It's mm-hmm. a capital. It's a capital market where you can fund mm-hmm. Companies. Mm-hmm. And when you fund companies, you help them grow mm-hmm. Because maybe they're working on like deep research AI and mm-hmm. they need compute, mm-hmm. right? Or they're working on deep tech or deep hardware mm-hmm. like Anduril. I don't know if you heard of Anduril. So basically, they're a self-defense mm-hmm. Defense tech.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyways, they need to build these drones mm-hmm. For the military. And they need, you know, they need cash. Mm-hmm. So, that's basically venture capital is a funding tool mm-hmm. or, yeah, a market where you can provide capital to mm-hmm. startups mm-hmm. in return for equity. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Shark Tank?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Shark Tanks, except it's the legality of things are a little bit different.
Yeah.
So then we start with, you know, raising capital. So one thing I want to preface is to, like, you know, students that are kind of new to the startup space and they want to start their own company and they get so excited about raising money. You know, it's not all fruits and you know, it's not all giggles and laughs, right?
Yeah.
This is something that, you know, this is essentially issuing debt. So it's not free money.
Yeah.
So founders that want to come in, they have to understand that if you're raising capital, you have to do it for a good reason. You don't have to, you can't do it just because, like, your idea is pretty cool and you just want to build something for your friends. This is, you know, real money. And this is also affecting you at the end of the day, right? You're liable for this stuff. So I would say I was listening to a podcast by Henry Ward. He's basically the CEO of Carta. And Carta is this fundraising software tool.
Yeah.
And he basically said that raising capital, you got to think of it more like a filtering process than a popularity contest. Because once you raise money, you feel good about yourself, you know. I raise X amount, look how cool I am, whatever. Obviously don't do that. But you got to think of it more as a filtering process. The people that you are bringing onto your team, these venture firms, do they understand the domain that you're in? Are they experts? Quite literally, have they been in the markets for a long time? You have to assess all of this stuff. Also with, like, the general partners that come in, the people that work with you directly, you know, are they a value add to you? Do you think that they would help you, you know, connect to other players in the space or give you advice on, like, how products should be built, what the user might think of when they use your product, right? So they have to know all of this stuff, and it's kind of like you know, it's two sides of the token. So if you have a really good idea, you get a lot of investors coming at you, that's a good problem to have. You can't bring all of them in, right? So you have to be very picky. You have to pick the best of the best.
Yeah.
The people that are not trying to screw you out.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. I mean, there's like, there's different stages of funding.
Exactly.
All the way up to when you go public, IPO, and then you're going to be in NASDAQ in New York. But like before that, there's like different stages of like an investment funding.
The beginning stages, they're more risky.
Yeah.
They kind of go all in because there's a lot of uncertainty. So we raised at a seed stage.
Okay, so seed stage.
Yes, right. So this is kind of between the 6-figure to 7-figure range. And then, you know, over time, you know, as you go through the stages, sometimes we may not want to go through another round, right? Because you're also diluting your equity as well. So that's key note. That's why I say it's not, oh, you let me accept all this money, really cool. Like, there's been a lot of scary stories where, you know, companies have raised billions of dollars and they don't meet expectations. And so it's, you know, what happened there?
Yeah.
Like, you have all this money. Sometimes it's just not good to have all of this money because you don't know what to do with it. You have to start with what you need.
Yeah. So just, like, stretch that dollar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Stretch that dollar to as what you need, the minimum that you need until your company has enough revenue or is self-sufficient. So for us, we started at a seed stage. And, you know, also as you move through the stages, the expectations are higher.
Yeah.
Right. So for us, our expectations were like, hey, we just want to get this product out.
Yeah.
We're still pre-revenue. We're still pre-profit. And we don't have expectations of, like, how this is going to turn out. We just want to get this product out in the world. So, hey, we might need some capital to be able to hire employees, speed up the iteration process, and just build good products.
Yeah.
So from then, you know, we were able to raise a good amount. And we hired engineers. We hired designers. So I learned so much. Like, this whole process of just starting from nothing and then just kind of like having a 7-8 employee business, it's, you learn a lot.
Yeah.
You learn how the product. You learn how product works, mm-hmm. what the user needs. Mm-hmm. You learn how to prioritize things, mm-hmm. like really how to cut off the excess fat. Mm-hmm. That's something that before, you know, sometimes we get delved into trying to do everything and we just need to be perfect. Mm-hmm. That's something that I think also like the school system kind of like, told us to do. We gotta be perfect. We gotta get straight A's. You know, if you don't do this thing, you're just not gonna be a smart kid. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's all wrong. I think once you get into college, I think college is great because of that, because it gives you the freedom mm-hmm. to think and to question things and to mm-hmm. talk to people like you or me or, you know, things like that. And kind of create conversations, question life, mm-hmm. Be nerdy.
Like that. Well, Roberto, so far you told me to build a software business, of course you need a good idea, not an idea, but you found a problem for mm-hmm. a user and you had like a specific angle towards finding that solution. You also had teammates and you also went to like a hackathon, like a pressurized environment where you had to iterate fast and you had to learn quickly how to do things. And then you also said that when you're raising capital, you need to stretch that dollar because you only use what you need so you can build your products faster.
You should
only use what you need so that you can build your products better and that you have the capability to like break things. Because what I noticed, mm-hmm. you said that like it's like issuing debt. You said you're gonna issue debt mm-hmm. if you like raise money too fast. Right. So
I mean, the whole process, you're always issuing debt.
Yeah, right. But you don't want as much so that you can have that sort of flexibility and that freedom to break things and be, you know, kind of crazy mm-hmm. and risky. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So what else have you learned about building a software business? Because like building a regular business, you kind of like have to open a shop and stuff like that. But with mm-hmm. software, it's like you can start with nothing and you can literally go to the moon if you want.
So the cool thing with GammaSwap is that all you need, at mm-hmm. least with everyone that works in GammaSwap, mm-hmm. all you need is a computer and an internet connection.
Yeah.
You know how cool that is? You need a room, obviously. You gotta sit down. You gotta sit down, but you know, it's not like how it was building companies before mm-hmm. where, you know, you have to set up shop, mm-hmm. you have to open something, you have to, mm-hmm. You know, walk to places. Well, that's kind of like really far.
Yeah, like if you were a restaurant, you have to think about your waiters.
Make flyers, give it to a lot of people, mm-hmm. like go to places. You can get your chefs. Word out on Twitter.
Yeah.
You can pretty much go viral on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what a lot of like kids are doing now, mm-hmm. where they're kind of just using social media as a tool mm-hmm. to promote their business or products or mm-hmm. whatever. And there's a lot of leverage there. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of the cool things that I've learned also mm-hmm. as a founder is that the relationship you have with the people you start a company with, mm-hmm. it's like a marriage.
Wow.
So it's you have to treat it like a marriage because you're constantly talking to them all the time. You're constantly debating mm-hmm. and constantly might not reach to the same ideas, mm-hmm. right? So there might be a little bit of disagreement mm-hmm. and it happens all the time and that is normal mm-hmm. that is normal as a founder to have a lot of disagreements and a lot of debate mm-hmm. that actually is good for the company because you're essentially allowing for free discussion and then that free discussion leads to ideas mm-hmm. and so one thing I've noticed is that picking the correct people to work along with you mm-hmm. is vital, right? Mm-hmm. If you know you want people that are driven at the same wavelength as you. Mm. You can't have someone here and then someone here. It has to be constant on the same page and always updating each other to stay on that same page because if not, you know, company building is really hard. It's really hard.
It's not like a fun little hackathon project anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At least in the first stages it was so fun. Like, whoa, hackathon project. You know, if it breaks, it breaks. Yeah. But here now we have users. If it breaks, there's an issue. Yeah. There's an issue. We gotta, you know, everyone has to stay on the same page. You know, mm-hmm. there's a lot more responsibilities mm-hmm. now that, you know, we have employees, we have engineers. Mm-hmm. So I've taken more, the way I do GammaSwap is that I lead product. Mm-hmm. So I make sure that what's on GammaSwap.com, what's mm-hmm. on app.gammaswap.com mm-hmm. is pristine, mm-hmm. is great engineering works.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think I take a lot of pride in myself because there's a lot of work that was done.
Yeah.
I would consider myself friends with a rooster.
Yeah.
Let me tell you why, because there's a rooster by my house, and around 3 to 5 a.m. it starts yapping.
Oh, no.
So you know you're up pretty late.
Yeah.
when you start hearing that rooster.
That's so Miami.
Well, that is very Miami, but I don't know if we're hearing roosters at 4 or 5 in the morning. We're usually sleeping, right?
Yeah. Usually in the yard, there's like, go, 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 go.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Gives me memories. Exactly. So, you know, that's the thing. What I'm trying to say is I feel like I'm friends with the rooster because I've stayed up so late for so many times, you know, working on making sure the launch makes sense and works and doesn't fail us. And I think that's something that you have to accept as a founder is that there are going to be a lot of hard days.
Mm-hmm.
The faster you accept that it's going to be a tough time, the better it is. It's going
to
be for you.
Yeah. It's like everybody has to go through the trough of sorrow.
Exactly. There's I don't know if you've seen that graph.
Yeah.
Computer science majors, it's like it goes all the way up. Like, wow, I'm learning all these nice things, if statements, for loops. And then I get into microservices. or I get into like deep database, like algorithms class. A star search algorithms.
And then you're can I just like marry a rich man at this point? Well, not for you. You're probably just like, I'll switch my career or something.
I guess. Yeah, but everyone has to go through that trough of sorrow.
Yeah.
It's something that, again, you have to be willing to accept. Another thing that I wanted to add was when you're building, with co-founders, it's very keen to decide quickly and move on. Sometimes we get into analysis paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone has that moment where we think of things too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the best decision is to make the decision, is to get through it and just move on. If it breaks, just pivot quickly into the next thing. But you have to always have direction.
Mm-hmm.
No direction is scary. Mm-hmm. At GammaSwap, the only thing that's constant is change.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it.
That's so cool.
Everything changes.
The only thing that's constant is change when you're building
exactly
a software business from the ground up.
At least in the startup world.
In the startup world, yeah. Right.
Once you get, closer to IPO, or if you're in a Series B or A or C, things are a little bit much slower.
Mm-hmm.
So as hard, but
the
change is much less than like a seed stage startup where everything is like, you know, one day we're changing our name, one day we're changing our startup name.
Me.
The other day we're scrapping this code base. We're gonna start from fresh.
It sounds like your experience with computer science helped you so much become a better leader, because there are some like people who are, you know, leaders. Like, I've seen startup founders talk about, like, oh, yeah, we build a software business, and I used to work with software. And then they told me, oh, yeah, I did, like, HTML, CSS when I was, like, 12. But now I'm working with engineers, and, like, I saw in his face that, like, he didn't understand what the engineers were doing.
Mm,
and if you're building a software business,
red flag.
You gotta know what you gotta
do. You gotta know. You have to know. And I one thing that I would say also for startup founders is when you get into a domain, get deep.
Yeah.
Get really deep. Like, to the point where people are going to be asking you questions because you're the only one with that knowledge.
You have to be like obsessed with the problem. Obsessed with the with the domain you're going
to
be in.
Yeah, you have to at least have a very long depth of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I advise startup founders. Also, one thing that would make you dangerous as a founder is think of your skill set as a T.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to have your expertise level. You're basically, your body is the expertise, right? Mm-hmm. It goes all the way down. And that should be infinite, right? That should be your bread and butter of knowledge. But then you have your arms.
Mm-hmm.
And these are kind of like the other domains that you should be good at. Obviously, you don't have as much depth as your expertise, but you should know, you know, pretty well to have a conversation with someone, mm-hmm. to suggest things mm-hmm. to someone. And I feel like someone that has a T-shaped skill set, mm-hmm. where they, for example, if my main expertise is product and software engineering, mm-hmm. but then my other domains are marketing mm-hmm. or business or operations mm-hmm. or, you know, talking on a podcast, public speaking, mm-hmm. like that is very powerful. Mm-hmm. And that's very powerful for people who also maybe they don't want to start a company, but they want to join a startup. Mm-hmm. So the startup environment is very different from
like, corporate.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, that's also what I would say. Mm-hmm. I really think that there's a lot of smart people at FIU, mm-hmm. but they are scared to start a business because yeah. that will mean that it will take time away from their school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, usually we've been taught to think that, hey, you need a degree to survive in this world. Mm-hmm. To an extent, that is true because not everyone is going to be a yeah. founder or entrepreneur, which is yeah. okay. But for the people that actually have that inkling with them, you know, we need, like, Startup FIU would love to have, you know, more involvement there, mm-hmm. right? For, like, entrepreneurs that want to do things, mm-hmm. not on the side, but as the main thing.
Yeah.
You know, one thing, if the FIU guys are listening, is, you know, maybe we should implement an on-leave program. So these, I don't know if you've heard of schools like MIT or mm-hmm. Waterloo or Stanford, what they do. When I was at Facebook, this is how I learned it. Mm-hmm. They have these gap semesters that you could take. Mm-hmm. You say, hey, go build a business, go on an internship, mm-hmm. do whatever, do mm-hmm. something.
Yeah.
And come back to me with results mm-hmm. Or don't come back at all. Mm-hmm. And I love that they have the ability to say, hey, just don't come back at all. Mm-hmm. Because I feel, you know, that is the beauty of entrepreneurship, where mm-hmm. you just go at it for something for, you know, for mm-hmm. so long and so deep. And, you know, I think if we can foster that here in Miami, mm-hmm. that would bring a lot of capital. I don't know if Francis Suarez,
yeah.
he says a lot, you know, Miami should be the capital of capital. And mm-hmm. If you want to bring capital, you have yeah. to, you have to target schools.
Yeah.
Because that's where students, mm-hmm. that's where the people there are most motivated, mm-hmm. right? They are thinking of what I should do in my life, where mm-hmm. I should go. And a lot of people, sometimes they want to start a business, but they're too scared to.
Yeah.
So it would be really cool if FIU could implement some type of like program.
Or like
that.
Miami could do that. Because there's
I think there's a startup program. It's called Built in Miami.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, I guess there's so much benefit from having such diverse backgrounds and yeah. having a unique perspective on building of finding problems, building software, because you really get a more, you know, homogenous perspective, like right now. Mm-hmm. But like hearing your story, it's like, wow, like you were actually able to find a problem, build a solution, grow it, break it, fail at it, and then you learn so much through that. And I think that it's just a matter of motivating people. You know, one of the things I really want to do with this podcast is sort of help those young people who want to yeah. be aspiring entrepreneurs or people who want to learn more about the technology industry. And so, yeah, this is exactly what I love about today. So thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate
for
the time.
Coming in today, Roberto. I'm going to give you one last thing, the last thing that you would like to share outside of like all of the great advice you shared today. What's like one last piece of advice that you would give to someone who wants to build a software business?
So there's a story. Mm-hmm. There's a story about an Irish kid mm-hmm. and his friends, and they would always go to this wall. They would always climb it. Every day they would climb it. Some days they would go to another wall, and they would climb it. It would be so easy for them. But then one day, mm-hmm. they reached this orchid wall. And this orchid wall is really high, and they're like, wow, I've never seen this before. Mm-hmm. And then one kid, he decides he just throws the hat over the wall. And his friends are like, why did you do that? this is a folk tale.
Yeah.
And he's like, why did you do that? And he's like, well, now I have to go get it. Mm. So that basically says that he committed himself without knowing the risks. There could have mm-hmm. probably been alligators there mm-hmm. on the other side. But he said, I have to go retrieve that hat. So basically what the lesson is here is If you want to do anything in your life, just commit. Commit without knowing the risks. At least if, like, your audience, most of your audience is going to be, like, 18 to 22-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
You have to just throw the hat over the wall. That's mm-hmm. what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Just throw it now without knowing the risks, but do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that will put your back against the wall. Mm-hmm. And that'll force you to mm-hmm. be like, to start solving those problems, start be like, okay, well, how do mm-hmm. I get through this thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it actually forces you. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's what I would say to get that internal motivation with you, because at the end of the day, you are the only person that will things into mm-hmm. reality, right? Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, you can have a support system as mm-hmm. much as possible,
mm-hmm.
right? But at the end of the day, it's you.
Yeah.
And again, like the faster you are willing to accept that, mm-hmm. the better it's going to be. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
That's it.
Throw the hat over the wall.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Roberto. Now I'm going to give you a chance to promote anything that you'd like and how people can reach you.
Yeah. So you can reach me on X, which is formerly Twitter. I am Rob Mart. So I am. Mm-hmm. And then Robmart. So mm-hmm. I'm going to be doing a lot of these kind of these screenshot essays, just mm-hmm. my thoughts, collective thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'm going to launch a blog soon there. So, mm-hmm. just of my collective thoughts and yeah, just advice. So, and you can also reach me on LinkedIn, Roberto Martinez,
mm-hmm.
if you want. And also GammaSwap, GammaSwap.com,
mm-hmm.
GammaSwap.com.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much, Robert.
All right. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Forward Thinkers Show.